I am Mark Glaze. I'm executive director of Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which is now, I think, 1,036 mayors, Republicans and Democrats and independents from big cities and small towns who have gotten together starting just back in 2007 because they felt that the conversation about gun violence had become stale and stultified and driven by talking points rather than driven by data and what makes for sound public policy. There are lots of reasons for that that go beyond my purpose here today, and many of you know it as well or better than I do. It's a fun conversation to have, but probably not one for today. I'm here, I think, primarily to learn, and I've done a lot of that so far, and to stand by people who have been heroes from afar for a long time, like General Satcher, who did this work both for a long time and when it was not easy to do and when people didn't really want it done. And I think that is kind of the way we think about ourselves today. So we are happy to be associated with folks like him who did the initial very important work. I also want to give you a little bit of a sense of, while the folks on the panel and you are working on what I sometimes think imprecisely of as the demand side of the gun problem, the larger crime problem, I want to tell you a little bit about what we're doing on what I sometimes think of as the supply side of the problem. You are looking at kind of what drives human beings to act badly, to want guns. We look at what we can do kind of once those problems have already made themselves manifest, what you can do to cut off the supply of guns and to punish those who use them inappropriately, and to assure you that we see the value of both. Mayor Bloomberg is a huge believer in research, and as a result has Ted, who is my colleague and went to what is now called the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins University, can tell you more about how this happened and how the mayor got involved in public health more broadly, but really it started with smoking. And has moved on to guns and now obesity, three of the big and most deadly public policy problems, and all of which was felt there was not enough research on the demand side and not enough being done by mayors all the way up on the supply side. I learned a little bit more about this problem when, you know, I started to learn after I became executive director 2.5 years ago about how much there was to learn and how little we know about the problem on either side. That led to a report that we wrote, which, shockingly to me, was the first kind of comprehensive analysis of just how much we aren't allowed to know because the gun lobby and their friends in Congress don't want you to know it. The report was called Access Denied. And it was, as I said, the first comprehensive kind of tick, tick, tick analysis of all of the different ways in which we simply don't know enough and have been blocked from knowing what we need to know to make good public policy. And as a result, not just in Congress, but in legislatures and in state houses around the country, you have a situation not just of garbage in, garbage out, but of nothing in, nothing out. And there has become, you know, a void, a legislative void and a policy void on the topic in all too many places because we simply don't know enough to make sound public policy. And as many of you know, but some may not, this extends not just to the ban on CDC research leading to, you know, advocacy of gun policy. It's the chilling effect that has kind of flown outward from that ban to private institutions. It's things like a ban that our coalition actually managed to get lifted, working with generals and public health experts on military troop leaders and civilian doctors in the military service asking troops and asking civilians who are serving with them whether they have guns at home, even though there is an epidemic of military suicide. Managed to get that lifted. Other folks here have done very good work along with the Brady campaign in opposing a gag order on pediatricians in the state of Florida and soon elsewhere, whether or not they can ask parents and children about whether there are guns in the home, whether they're safely stored, despite the fact that we know that those are very important public health questions that can actually save lives. So while we focus, and I want to talk a little bit about the supply side and what we're doing, Mayor Bloomberg believes, and the rest of our mayors understand, that that is a small slice of the problem and that much more needs to be done than the demand side, and we want to be helpful in every way that we can, and I hope that we can use this to kind of deepen the dialogue that has happened between our two sides. And the result can be everything from, you know, Mayor Bloomberg is always looking for promising stuff to give some attention to and some resources to. He has said he's going to spend the rest of his life finding ways to bounce the check to the undertaker, and part of that will mean funding additional research in this and other areas. So I hope that we can keep talking. So on the supply side, one of the things that I say sometimes without knowing what the hell I'm talking about, because I'm not actually an MD or a PhD or an MPH, but the facts simply seem clear, is, you know, people on the side of the gun lobby have encouraged members of Congress and the public to think of this as solely a cultural problem. It's about video games, because so many of the troubled young white men, which is almost exclusively who perpetrate these mass murders in largely white enclaves, another fact that is interesting to talk about. And it must be, if not video games, American movies, or some other aspect of a culture that has been coarsened, all an argument that is very much worth having, but also very consistent with a conservative view of the world, and also very consistent with the objectives of the gun lobby, which are to push this problem off onto something else, and not the fact that, despite the fact that in the United Kingdom they watch American movies and play American video games, and I think are not less mentally ill than we are, though again, I'm not the expert on that. In any given year in the United Kingdom, there are, you know, between 40 and 50 or so gun-related homicides, and in the United States, there are between 11 and 12,000. About 15 times the murder rate of any industrialized Western country, maybe 20 at this point. And the reason is, again, not necessarily because of those things, though all of those things are fair and we ought to look at them. It's because of differences in the way we treat gun laws. You know, another argument that you sometimes hear from the gun lobby, which is the very height of irony, so much so that while I'm outraged, I giggle when I hear it, is that, well, there are so many guns in the country, 300 million, more guns than there are people, as Mayor Bloomberg sometimes says. You pass more laws, there's so many guns, all you're ever going to do is keep guns out of the hands of the law-abiding. Sort of ignoring the irony and the circularity that the gun lobby has spent a generation weakening gun laws, including things like in Virginia, something that's being litigated in the election there right now, eliminating an innovative one-gun-a-month purchase law that was crafted as a compromise between Mayor Dinkins of New York and then Governor Wilder of Virginia to stop guns from going up the iron pipeline from states with weak gun laws like Virginia and the Carolinas to states with strong gun laws like Massachusetts and New York. So they, having facilitated a culture and a legal regime in which guns are freely available in as great a bulk as people can afford, they now go to the other side of the equation and say, you know, having facilitated this problem, it's now, you know, so big a problem that new laws can't ever work. I don't know why I told you about that. It's just something that I like to talk about because it sort of tells you kind of where they're coming from and the cynicism that we have to cut through to get anything done. But let me tell you a little bit about where we're focused on the supply side and where I think we will want to focus more attention as the Mayor leaves office. We shift to a somewhat broader agenda while mayors continue to do the work that they're doing on the supply side. First is that there are things that we know work. They're not perfect, but we know that they work well. One of them is background checks. This happens to be an issue on which the public is now wildly more educated than it was prior to the Tucson shooting, which was a background check case. But many people don't know that no matter that you don't have to get a background check if you choose one buyer over another. Under federal law, the only selling entity that has to give you a background check and run it through the federal database, which is supposed to include all felons, all domestic violence offenders, all people who are so seriously mentally ill that they've been adjudicated mentally ill by a judge, is a licensed gun dealer. And that accounts for a smaller and smaller percentage, though it's still the bulk, of gun sales in the country. Because of loopholes that the gun lobby used to say that they supported closing, but frankly don't anymore because it's not in their kind of political or financial interest, if you buy a gun from an unlicensed private seller, meaning somebody online on armslist.com or on any given day, 75 or 90,000 people are selling guns, most of them private sellers. Or you go to a gun show where licensed dealers are selling guns on a table and unlicensed private sellers are selling guns on a table and they look exactly alike and there is no distinguishing the two except at one you get a background check and at the other you don't, you realize that we have set up a system that is binary and makes absolutely no sense from a crime prevention perspective. It's like going to the airport and if there's one line that you can go through if you want to avoid security and the magnetometer, and there's another line you can go through and still get on the plane with no security. Guess what the criminals choose to do? So led by Ted Alcorn, our Bloomberg School of Public Health graduate, who now leads our research efforts, we analyzed a tiny, tiny corner of this online criminal market. And this is people who actually place ads saying that they want to buy a gun and give you some identifying information so you can reach them who actually happen to have a criminal record or a domestic violence record. Just two of the factors that might prohibit you from owning a gun, and there are others, like being adjudicated mentally ill. We found that in this tiny corner of people who happen to be, have to be stupid, because you can go online and find any kind of gun you want by looking at ads of people trying to sell. If you're trying to buy a specific kind of gun and you place an ad and give identifying information, you've given up the cloak of anonymity. So you're not thinking very clearly if you're trying to avoid your background check. But we found that 1 out of 30 people who had placed these kinds of want ads on armslist.com were actually prohibited purchasers because of a criminal or domestic violence record. And if they seek out private sellers, there is actually no obligation on the part of the seller to give them a background check. So we found that people who are placing these ads are more than 4 times as likely to be criminals on armslist.com as the people who go to a licensed dealer that have to get a background check. So this private sale loophole is an enormous, enormous problem. And, you know, not surprisingly, it is about 40% on any given year of the gun sales in this country, though that's a number that it's hard to know precisely. It might be too big or too little. And necessarily that's, you know, and obviously to us, that's the place where much of the criminal traffic is going. Closing that loophole, actually not even all of that loophole, is the option that a minority of the United States Senate rejected, giving you a catalog of reasons that were categorically false, that reflected that they either had not read the bill or had simply been handed a set of talking points by the gun lobby and they had voted accordingly. I think we're going to win on that. We're already winning in the states, where this year we passed more laws, including in places like Colorado and Delaware. Colorado, you know, where I grew up and my dad was a gun dealer, has a very strong tradition, not just of hunting and sportsmanship, but also of libertarianism. We don't really like the government telling us what to do. Where nevertheless, 90% of the public, including 78% of NRA members, think that a 2-minute background check is not too high a price to pay for public safety. And we know that the system works. Since it was stood up and law was passed in 94, 95, system became operational in 98, more than 2 million prohibited purchasers, felons, domestic violence offenders, the seriously mentally ill, fugitives from justice, and others have been stopped at the point of purchase. But today, what do? They go to the line without the magnetometer from a private seller who doesn't have to buy, give them a background check online or at a gun show. So closing that loophole for us, both at the state and federal level, remains job number one, because it's the most effective thing you could do long-term to solve the problem, making sure that first sale, but also subsequent sales, are subject to background checks. It's also the most politically saleable because it is, to use a phrase I hate, a no-brainer. Everybody basically agrees except the NRA. Second, gun trafficking. Many people don't know this, but there is actually no federal statute that makes gun trafficking a crime. Instead, gun trafficking or straw purchasing, meaning you're actually going to a gun dealer because you have a clean record and buying guns, and on your form you say that this gun is for you and you're legally entitled to buy it, but then you take those guns and pass them off to somebody else who doesn't have a clean record, which is straw purchasing. It's a paperwork violation, and it carries about the same penalty as trafficking livestock or chickens in this country, and that's the reason that it's not very often enforced. Another of the arguments of the NRA has been, well, the background check system doesn't work and the laws aren't working now. You know, tens of thousands of people were denied when they tried to buy a gun but were prohibited, and only something like 44 of them were prosecuted a few years ago. Well, that's a dumbing down of a very real scenario. Part of the reason they weren't prosecuted often enough is that it's very hard to prove. It's jury unfriendly, it's a paperwork violation, and the penalties are not very strong, so it's no particular wonder that in a justice system and a judicial system that is wildly overtaxed and doesn't have enough resources, people choose not to prosecute these things. So, you know, our proposal, which, again, ought to be one of those low-hanging fruit that you can get done easily, and we think we will, is to make trafficking a crime. There should be a federal statute, it should be a felony, and there should be serious penalties attached. Again, could get a majority, could not get a cloture-proof majority in the United States Senate. A third area that we're beginning to focus increased attention on is domestic violence. In states that have closed the private sale loophole, 38% fewer women are murdered with a gun. And finally, apropos of much of what you're discussing here, we're talking about children. We worked with Michael Luo, who wrote, you know, the groundbreaking New York Times story showing that the number of children who are murdered through accident or killed through accidents with a gun may actually be twice as high as we think it is, and that's something also that we largely know how to fix.